Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us as we travel this week to France. France is the largest country in Western Europe and one of the most beautiful countries in the world. French food is famous the world over. French bread, cheeses, wine, and pastries are served everywhere, and you can buy many of these in your local stores. France is bordered by Spain, Belgium, Italy, Switzerland, and the tiny country of Luxembourg. France is famous also for its perfume, probably the most expensive in the world. Perfume has been popular for hundreds of years. Supposedly, the French lords and ladies didn't bathe much, so perfume was something they loved to put on for, well, obvious reasons. For further information about France for Children, I suggest EasyScienceForKids.com. Our first tale is about a very clever and enterprising little duck. Here is Quackling. Quackling was very little. That is why he was called Quackling. However, tiny as he was, he had brains, and he knew what he was about, for having begun with nothing, he ended by amassing 100 crowns. Now, the king of the country was a spendthrift who never kept any money. When he heard that Quackling had some, he went one day to him himself and borrowed his hoard. For quite some time afterwards, Quackling was proud of having lent money to the king. But after the first and second year, seeing that the king never even dreamed of paying the interest, Quackling became uneasy, so much so that at last he resolved to go to the king to get repaid. So one fine morning, Quackling, very trim and fresh, took to the road, singing, "Quack, quack, quack, when shall I get my money back?" He had not gone far when he met his friend, the fox, who was on his rounds that day. "Good morning, neighbor," said the fox. "Where are you off to so early?"
"I am going to the king for what he owes me."
"Oh, take me with you," Quackling said to himself.
"One cannot have too many friends."
"I will," said he, "but going on all fours, you will soon be tired. Make yourself quite small, get into my throat, go into my gizzard, and I will carry you."
"Happy thought," said the fox. He took bag and baggage and entered the little duck. Quackling walked further, all trim and fresh, still singing,
"Quack, quack, quack, when shall I get my money back?"
He had not gone far when he met his lady friend, Ladder, leaning on a wall.
"Good morning, my duckling," said the lady friend. "Where are you off so bold?"
"I am going to the king for what he owes me."
"Oh, take me with you,"
Quackling said to himself.
"One can't have too many friends."
"I will," said he, "but with your wooden legs, you will soon be tired. Make yourself quite small, get into my throat, go into my gizzard, and I will carry you."
"Happy thought," said Ladder, and entered the little duck to keep company with their friend, the fox. And
quack, quack, quack,
Quackling was off again, singing and trim as before. A little farther, he met his friend, River, who was wandering quietly in the sunshine.
"Where are you going on this muddy road?" asked River.
"I am going to the king for what he owes me."
"Oh, take me with you,"
Quackling said to himself.
"We can't have too many friends."
"I will," he said, "but to spare you of the road, make yourself quite small, get into my throat, go into my gizzard, and I will carry you."
"Ah, happy thought," said the friendly River.
She took bag and baggage and glug, 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 found a place between the fox and the ladder in the little duck. And
quack, quack, quack,
Quackling was off again singing. A little further on, he met his comrade Wasp's Nest. It was filled with many wasps indeed.
"Well, good morning, Quackling," said Wasp's Nest. "Where are you bound for so trim and fresh?"
"I am going to the king for what he owes me."
"Oh, take me with you,"
Quackling said to himself.
"One can't have too many friends."
"I will," said he,
"but with your many wasps to drag along, you may soon be tired. Make yourself quite small, go into my throat, get into my gizzard, and I will carry you."
"That's a good idea," said Wasp's Nest, and very soon joined the others with all his party.
There was not much more room, but by closing up a bit, they managed. Very soon, Quackling was off again singing. He arrived at the capital and threaded his way straight up the high street, still running and singing. "Quack, quack, quack! When shall I get my money back?" The good folks who heard it were greatly astonished. Soon enough, Quackling came to the king's castle. He struck with the knocker. "Tock, tock!" "Who is there?" asks the porter, putting his head out of the opening beside the door.
"It is I, Quackling. I wish to speak to the king."
"Speak to the king? That's easily said. The king is dining and will not be disturbed."
"Tell him that it is I, and he knows very well why I have come."
The porter shut his opening and went up to say it to the king, who was just sitting down to dinner with a napkin round his neck with all his ministers.
"Good, good," said the king, laughing. "I know what's about. Make him come in and put him in with the turkeys and the chickens."
The porter descended. "Have the goodness to enter."
"Good," said Quackling to himself. "I shall now see how they eat at court."
This way," said the porter. "One step further. There, there you are."
"How? What? In the poultry yard?"
How vexed Quackling was.
"Ah, so that's it," said he. "Wait, I will compel you to receive me. Quack, quack, quack. When shall I get my money back?"
But turkeys and chickens don't like those who are not as themselves. When they saw the newcomer and how he was made, and when they heard him crying too, they began to look scornfully at him. "What is it? What does he want?" Finally, they rushed at him all together to overwhelm him with pecks.
"I am lost," said Quackling to himself, when by good luck he remembered the fox in his gullet and cried out to him, "Reynard, Reynard, come out fast. Oh, my life may just not last."
The fox was only waiting for these words. He hastened out, threw himself on the wicked fowls, and quick, quick, he tore them to pieces, so much so that after 5 minutes there was not one left alive. Quackling, quite content, began to sing again.
"Quack, quack, quack! When shall I get my money back?"
When the king, who was still at table, heard this refrain, and the poultry woman came to tell him what had been going on in the yard, he was terribly annoyed and ordered them to throw Quackling into the well to make an end of him. It was done as the king commanded. Quackling was at first in despair of getting himself out of such a deep hole, but then he remembered his lady friend, the ladder.
"Ladder, ladder, come out fast, or it's over for me at last."
Friendly Ladder was only waiting for these words. She hastened out, leaned her two arms on the edge of the well, and then Quackling climbed nimbly up, and hop, he was in the yard and began to sing louder than ever. When the king, who was still at table and laughing at the good trick he had played on someone he owed money to, heard Quackling, he was enraged. He commanded that the furnace should be heated and the little duck thrown into it. The furnace was soon hot, but this time Quackling was not so afraid. He counted on his sweet friend River.
"River, river, flow out fast, or I doubt that I can last."
The river hastened out and threw herself into the furnace and flowed over it and all the people who had lit it. Afterwards, she flowed growlingly into the hall of the palace to the height of more than 4 feet. And Quackling, quite content, began to swim, singing deafeningly.
"Quack, quack, quack! When shall I get my money back?"
The king was still at table and thought himself quite sure of his game. But when he heard Quackling singing again, and when others told him all that had passed, he became furious and got up from table waving his fists. "Bring him here and I'll cut his throat. Bring him here quick," he cried. Quickly, 2 footmen ran to fetch Quackling.
"At last they have decided to receive me," said Quackling, going up the great stairs.
Imagine his terror when, on entering, he sees the king as red as a turkey cock, and all the ministers attending the king, who was standing sword in hand. Quackling thought this time it was all up with him, but luckily he remembered that there was still one friend left in him, and he cried with dying accents,
"Wasp's nest, make a sally, or Quackling never any more shall rally."
The wasps flew out and the scene changed. Bzz, bzz, bayonet them.
The wasps threw themselves on the infuriated king and his ministers and stung them so fiercely in the face that they lost control, and not knowing where to hide themselves, they all jumped pell-mell from the window and cracked their heads on the stones below. Quackling was much astonished to find himself all alone in the big hall. Nevertheless, he remembered what he had come for to the palace and set to work to hunt for his dear money. But he rummaged in all the drawers in vain. He found nothing. All had been spent. Searching in this way from room to room, he came at last to the one with the throne in it. He felt fatigued and sat down on it to think over his adventure. In the meantime, the people of the land had found their king and his ministers with their feet in the air on the pavement, and they had gone into the palace to know how it had happened. On entering the throne room, the crowd saw that there was already someone on the royal seat, and broke out in cries of surprise and joy. "The king is dead! Long live the king! Heaven has sent us down this duckling!" Quackling, who was no longer much surprised at anything, received the applause of the people as if he had never done anything else all his life. A few of them murmured that a duck might not be a fine king, but those who knew him replied that a wise quackling was a much worthier king than a spendthrift like the one that was lying on the pavement. In short, they ran and took the crown off the head of the deceased king and placed it on the head of Quackling. It fit perfectly. "Well," Quackling said, "I never got my money, but I've been thinking I will happily stay here and be your duck king." And of course, he lived there happily ever after. The next story is a short one about a rooster who escapes the cooking pot and ends up in a most unusual place. Here is The Rooster and His Companions. Once there was a cock that was so old that the farmer decided to slaughter him. But the cock overheard what this farmer was about to do to him and headed for the woods. On the way, he met a sheep. "Hello, rooster." "Hello, sheep. What are you doing?" said the rooster.
"Nothing."
"Do you want to come with me?"
"Yes," replied the sheep.
On the way, they met a cat.
"Hello, rooster and sheep," said the cat.
"Hello, cat. What are you doing?"
"Nothing, meow."
"Do you want to come with us?" said the rooster.
"Yes,"
said the cat. In the night, they saw a house with no lights coming out from the windows. The three companions went closer and found that three wolves lived there, and then they went up on the roof. A wild boar's skin was attached to the top of the chimney there to keep rain out. The sheep sent the skin to the bottom of the chimney. When the sooted, heavy skin came banging down, the wolves were scared and fled at full speed. The three companions went into the house. The cock settled on a shelf. The sheep found a place next to the door, while the cat jumped into a corner by the fireplace. But one of the wolves had forgotten his knife and came back to look for it. From his shelf, the rooster said, "If I make use of my two sickles, I will cut off your head." The cat said to him from the fireplace corner,
"If I go with my awl, I'll tear out his eyes."
Terrified, the wolf started off at full speed for the door. Then the sheep, who stood next to it, butted him in the flanks. When the wolf found his comrades, he said to them, "There was a reaper who wanted to cut my neck, a shoemaker who wanted to tear out my eyes, and a barrel maker who rammed me in the back." And so the rooster lived out his days in the wolf's hut, was never bothered again, and often had his friends, the sheep and the cat, come for a visit whenever they wished. Our last story is another Cinderella story. After all, the story we all know and love takes place in France. However, as you will see, it's different than all the movies. In fact, the ending might be, for some of you, quite surprising. Here is Cinderella, or the Little Glass Slipper. Once upon a time, there was a gentleman who married for his second wife the proudest and most haughty woman that ever was seen. She had two daughters of her own, who were, indeed, exactly like her in all things. The gentleman had also a young daughter, of rare goodness and sweetness of temper, which she took from her mother, who was the best creature in the world.
The wedding was scarcely over when the stepmother's bad temper began to show itself. She could not bear the goodness of this young girl because it made her own daughters appear the more odious. The stepmother gave her the meanest work in the house to do. She had to scour the dishes, tables, and to scrub the floors and clean out the bedrooms. The poor girl had to sleep in the garret upon a wretched straw bed, while her sisters lay in fine rooms with inlaid floors upon beds of the very newest fashion, and where they had looking glasses so large that they might see themselves at their full length. The poor girl bore all patiently and dared not complain to her father, who would have scolded her if she had done so, for his wife governed him entirely. When she had done her work, she used to go into the chimney corner and sit down among the cinders. Hence she was called Cinder Wench. The younger sister of the two, who was not so rude and uncivil as the elder, called her Cinderella. However, Cinderella, in spite of her mean apparel, was 100 times more handsome than her sisters, though they were always richly dressed. It happened that the king's son gave a ball and invited to it all persons of fashion. Our young misses were also invited, for they cut a very grand figure among the people of the countryside. They were highly delighted with the invitation and wonderfully busy in choosing the gowns, petticoats, and headdresses which might best become them. This made Cinderella's lot still harder, for it was she who ironed her sister's linen and plaited their ruffles. They talked all day long of nothing but how they should be dressed. "For my part," said the elder, "I will wear my red velvet suit with French trimmings." "And I," said the younger, "shall wear my usual skirt, but then, to make amends for that, I will put on my gold-flowered mantle and my diamond stomacher, which is far from being the most ordinary one in the world." They sent for the best hairdressers they could get to make up their hair in fashionable style, and bought patches for their cheeks. Cinderella was consulted in all these matters, for she had good taste. She advised them always for the best, and even offered her services to dress their hair, which they were very willing she should do. As she was doing this, they said to her, "Cinderella, would you not be glad to go to the ball?" "Young ladies," she said, "you only jeer at me. It is not for such as I am to go there." "You are right," they replied. "People would laugh to see a cinder wench at a ball." Anyone but Cinderella would have dressed their hair awry, but she was good-natured and arranged it perfectly well. They were almost 2 days without eating, so much were they transported with joy. They broke about a dozen laces in trying to lace themselves tight, that they might have a fine, slender shape, and they were continually looking at their looking-glass. At last the happy day came. They went to court, and Cinderella followed them with her eyes as long as she could, and when she had lost sight of them, she fell a-crying. Her godmother, who saw her in all her tears, asked her what was the matter. I wish I could, but she could not finish for sobbing. Her godmother, who was a fairy, said to her, "You wish you could go to the ball, is it not so?" "Alas, yes," said Cinderella, sighing. "Well," said her godmother, "be but a good girl, and I will see that you go." Then she took her into her chamber and said to her, "Run into the garden and bring me a pumpkin." Cinderella went at once to gather the finest she could get and brought it to her godmother, not being able to imagine how this pumpkin could help her to go to the ball. Her godmother scooped out all the inside of it, leaving nothing but the rind. Then she struck it with her wand, and the pumpkin was instantly turned into a fine gilded coach. She then went to look into the mousetrap, where she found 6 mice, all alive. She ordered Cinderella to lift the trap door, when, giving each mouse, as it went out, a little tap with her wand, it was that moment turned into a fine horse, and the 6 mice made a fine set of 6 horses of a beautiful mouse-colored dapple gray. Being at a loss for a coachman, Cinderella said, "I will go and see if there is not a rat in the rat trap. We may make a coachman of him." "You are right," replied her godmother. "Go and look." Cinderella brought the rat trap to her, and in it there were 3 huge rats. The fairy chose the one which had the largest beard, and, having touched him with her wand, he was turned into a fat coachman with the finest mustache and whiskers ever seen. After that, she said to her, "Go into the garden and you will find 6 lizards behind the watering pot. Bring them to me." She had no sooner done so than her godmother turned them into 6 footmen who skipped up immediately behind the coach with their liveries all trimmed with gold and silver, and they held on as if they had done nothing else their whole lives. The fairy then said to Cinderella, "Well, you see here a carriage fit to go to the ball in. Are you not pleased with it?"
"Oh, yes," she cried, "but must I go as I am in these rags?"
Her godmother simply touched her with her wand, and at the same moment her clothes were turned into cloth of gold and silver, all decked with jewels. This done, she gave her a pair of the prettiest glass slippers in the whole world. Being thus attired, she got into the carriage, her godmother commanding her, above all things, not to stay till after midnight, and telling her at the same time that if she stayed one moment longer, the coach would be a pumpkin again, her horses mice, her coachman a rat, her footmen lizards, and her clothes would become just as they were before. She promised her godmother she would not fail to leave the ball before midnight. She drove away, scarce able to contain herself for joy. The king's son, who was told that a great princess, whom nobody knew, was coming, ran out to receive her. He gave her his hand as she alighted from the coach and led her into the hall where the company were assembled. There was at once a profound silence. Everyone left off dancing, and the violins ceased to play. So attracted was everyone by the singular beauty of the unknown newcomer. Nothing was then heard but confused sound of voices saying, "Ah, how beautiful she is! Ah, how beautiful she is!" The king himself, old as he was, could not keep his eyes off her, and he told the queen under his breath that it was a long time since he had seen so beautiful and lovely a creature. All the ladies were busy studying her clothes and headdress, so that they might have theirs made next day after the same pattern, provided they could meet with such fine materials and able hands to make them. The king's son conducted her to the seat of honor, and afterwards took her out to dance with him. She danced so very gracefully that they all admired her more and more. A fine collation was served, but the young prince ate not a morsel, so intently was he occupied with her. She went and sat down beside her sisters, showing them 1,000 civilities, and giving them, among other things, part of the oranges and citron with which the prince had regaled her. This very much surprised them, for they had not been presented to her. Cinderella heard the clock strike 11:45. She at once made her adieus to the company and hastened away as fast as she could. As soon as she got home, she ran to find her godmother, and after having thanked her, she said she much wished she might go to the ball the next day, because the king's son had asked her to do so. As she was eagerly telling her godmother all that happened at the ball, her 2 sisters knocked at the door. Cinderella opened it. "How long you have stayed," said she, yawning, rubbing her eyes, and stretching herself as if she had just been awakened. She had not, however, had any desire to sleep since they went away from home. "If you had been at the ball," said one of the sisters, "you would not have been tired with it. There came thither the finest princess, the most beautiful ever was seen with mortal eyes. She showed us 1,000 civilities and gave us oranges and citron." Cinderella did not show any pleasure at this. Indeed, she asked them the name of the princess, but they told her they did not know it, and that the king's son was very much concerned and would give all the world to know who she was. At this, Cinderella, smiling, replied, "Was she then so very beautiful? How fortunate you have been! Could I not see her? Ah, dear sister, do lend me your yellow suit of clothes which you wear every day."
"Aye, to be sure," cried the oldest sister. "Lend my clothes to such a dirty cinder wench as thou art? I should be out of my mind to do so."
Cinderella indeed expected such an answer and was very glad of the refusal, for she would have been sadly troubled if her sister had lent her what she jestingly asked for. The next day the 2 sisters went to the ball, and so did Cinderella, but dressed more magnificently than before. The king's son was always by her side, and his pretty speeches to her never ceased. These by no means annoyed the young lady. Indeed, she quite forgot her godmother's orders to her so that she heard the clock begin to strike 12 when she thought it could not be more than 11. She then rose up and fled, as nimble as a deer. The prince followed, but could not overtake her. She left behind one of her glass slippers, which the prince took up most carefully. She got home, but quite out of breath, without her carriage, and in her old clothes, having nothing left her of all her finery but one of the little slippers, fellow to the one she had dropped. The guards at the palace gate were asked if they had not seen a princess go out, and they replied they had seen nobody go out but a young girl, very meanly dressed, who had more the air of a poor country girl than of a young lady. When the two sisters returned from the ball, Cinderella asked them if they had had a pleasant time, and if the fine lady had been there. They told her, yes, but that she hurried away the moment it struck 12, and with so much haste that she dropped one of her little glass slippers, the prettiest in the world, which the king's son had taken up. They said further that he had done nothing but look at her all the time, and that most certainly he was very much in love with the beautiful owner of the glass slipper. What they said was true, for a few days after, the king's son caused it to be proclaimed, by sound of trumpet, that he would marry her whose foot this slipper would fit exactly. They began to try it on the princesses, then on the duchesses, and then on all the ladies of the court, but in vain. It was finally brought to the two sisters, who did all they could possibly do to thrust a foot into the slipper, but they could not succeed. Cinderella, who saw this and knew her slipper, said to them, laughing, "Let me see if it will not fit me." Her sisters burst out a-laughing and began to banter her. The gentleman who was sent to try the slipper looked earnestly at Cinderella and, finding her very handsome, said it was but just that she should try, and that he had orders to let every lady try it on. He obliged Cinderella to sit down, and putting the slipper to her little foot, he found it went on very easily and fitted her as if it had been made of wax. The astonishment of her two sisters was great. But it was still greater when Cinderella pulled out of her pocket the other slipper and put it on her foot. Thereupon, in came her godmother, who, having touched Cinderella's clothes with her wand, made them more magnificent than those she had worn before. And now her two sisters found her to be that beautiful lady they had seen at the ball. They threw themselves at her feet to beg pardon for all their ill treatment of her. Cinderella took them up, and as she embraced them, said that she forgave them with all her heart and begged them to love her always. She was conducted to the young prince, dressed as she was. He thought her more charming than ever, and a few days after married her. Cinderella, who was as good as she was beautiful, gave her two sisters a home in the palace, and that very same day married them to two great lords of the court. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll travel to Eastern Europe, home of ancient castles, gypsies, and vampires. This is Guima saying goodbye and happy reading. This has been a production of KCIW LP 100.7 FM in beautiful Brookings, Oregon.